Milan's Duomo neighborhood. For every church in Rome, there's a bank in Milan. While many tourists come to Italy only for the past, Milan is a delightful mix of both yesterday and today. Anchored by its historic cathedral, it's a modern city of refined tastes. The window displays are gorgeous, cigarettes are still chic, and even the cheese comes gift-wrapped. Hi, I'm Rick Steves. Thanks for joining me on a walk through the heart of Milan, the Duomo neighborhood. This walk is geographically short, but culturally very rich. We'll start at Milan's statue-studded cathedral, or Duomo. We'll go inside the Duomo to see its vast nave, as well as a number of historic and quirky sights. Then we go up to the church's rooftop for a one-of-a-kind experience overlooking the city. Next, we'll stroll through the Galleria, an elegant shopping arcade built in the 1800s, but just as lively today. Our walk will end at La Scala Opera House, ground zero for the world of opera. From there, the rest of Milan's great sights are just a short walk or metro ride away. All along our walk, we'll be rubbing shoulders with well-dressed Milanese, window shopping the high-fashion boutiques, and sipping coffee at the ritzy cafes. This walk is super easy to follow. You could even do this tour in as little as a 3-hour stopover in Milan while changing trains. Note that two of our high-powered sites, the Duomo interior and its rooftop, require a ticket. So get the latest information about booking ahead online. And be sure to check the updates page on this app for the latest tips on how to see these sites most efficiently. Even if you decide to skip these paid sites altogether, this tour can work just fine with a little navigating between tracks. Don't worry, we'll guide you as you go. Now, let's drop into Italy's urban powerhouse, a city built atop 2,000 years of history, the ever-vibrant metropolis of Milan. To help us along the way, I've invited a good friend and virtual travel buddy. Welcome, Lisa.
Ciao, Ricardo.
Lisa will give us helpful directions and sightseeing tips throughout the tour.
And my first tip is to be sure you get our tour updates. Just press the icon at the lower right of your device. You'll find any updates and helpful instructions unique to this tour.
Things like closures, opening hours, and reservation requirements.
There's also tips on how to use this audio tour and even the full printed script.
Yes, so pause for just a moment right now to review our updates and special tips.
It's okay, we'll wait.
And then,
let the tour begin.
The tour begins, the Piazza del Duomo.
Start in the piazza in front of Milan's famous cathedral, or Duomo. It's located right in the center of your Milan map, at the handy metro stop called Duomo. Find a place at the top end of the piazza, far enough back from the church that you can view the entire scene. The piazza, the Duomo, the historic buildings that surround the square, the statue in the center, and the bustle of activity all around. Rick?
Thanks, Lisa. You're standing at the heart of Milan. The piazza is a microcosm of the city as a whole, elegant, historic, energetic, and stylish. Milan is Italy's second city after Rome. It's the capital of the Italian region of Lombardy. With over 1 million people, Milan is a hard-working, style-conscious, time-is-money place. It's Italy's powerhouse of industry and banking. The country's major TV and publishing industries are based here, and many international corporations have their headquarters here.
I know Milan as the world-renowned center for high-fashion clothing and interior design.
Definitely, and we'll be seeing more of that later. Milan is also a major university town and northern Italy's main train hub. It supports not one, but two pro soccer teams, AC Milan and Inter Milan. And one of the world's most renowned Formula One race car tracks is in nearby Monza.
To much of the world, Milan is the cradle of opera. It's home to the world's most prestigious opera house, La Scala.
Yes. It's true that Milan can't compare with Rome and Florence in terms of museums, and it's not as charming as Venice. But it's still a highly cultured and essential piece of the puzzle that is Italy.
Let's stroll around a bit and get a closer look at the piazza's buildings.
In fact, as we do, we can trace Milan's illustrious 2,000-year history.
Molto bene. Start with the piazza's star attraction, the Duomo.
Before you rises the massive, prickly facade of Milan's cathedral, or Duomo in Italian. Its most unique feature is the many spires topped with statues. These represent the beloved saints who helped make this city great. The Duomo is a symbol of Milan's long 2,000-year history. Milan was founded right on this spot by the ancient Romans. The Romans built a temple here to the goddess Minerva. The Romans knew the city as Mediolanum, the place in the middle. That's because the city sits in the middle of Italy's central plain. By the 4th century AD, Milan was second only to the city of Rome itself. It even became the Roman Empire's western capital for a while when the vast empire had to be divided into two halves. As pagan Rome became Christian, Milan became the budding religion's center. It was from here that Emperor Constantine issued his famous Edict of Milan, legalizing Christianity. And presiding over Milan was one of early Christianity's most influential thinkers, Saint Ambrose.
More on Ambrose later, when we go inside the church. But for now, turn your attention to another building on the square. Facing the Duomo, find the building directly to the right of the Duomo. It's the big, cream and gray palazzo with a wide neoclassical facade.
It's situated at a 45-degree angle to the cathedral.
These days, the building houses the Duomo Museum.
But originally, this was the Palazzo Reale from the next phase of Milan's history. You see, after ancient Rome fell around 500 AD, Milan was ruled by a tribe called the Lombards.
Lombards. Ah, yes, we're in the region of Lombardy, and Milan's the capital.
While much of Europe floundered in medieval times, Milan actually thrived. The Palazzo Reale was Milan's city hall, ruling a prosperous and self-governing trading city. It became home to Milan's leading family, the Viscontis. In 1386, these ambitious bankers started construction on the Duomo, the big church we see today. By the Renaissance, Milan had become such a cultural center that it was known as the New Athens, and it attracted such bright lights as Leonardo da Vinci. But then came 400 years of foreign domination. Spain, France, Austria.
For that next phase of history, turn your attention back to the big statue. The statue in the very center of the Piazza del Duomo. The man on the horse is the man who drove out the foreigners and ushered in another glorious era.
This is Victor Emmanuel II, and it's the year 1859.
In fact, as the plaque on the base says, it's Junio MDCCCLIX.
That would be the month of June, 1859. It's the watershed Battle of San Martino, fought just north of the city. Victor Emmanuel comes charging in, sword in hand. He rears his horse and surveys the field. Victor's troops would go on to rout the Austrians. The Italian people, formerly divided and oppressed, would rise up united, led by Victor Emmanuel. Within a decade, the Austrians would be driven out, Italy was unified, and Victor Emmanuel was made ruler of the modern nation of Italy.
Below the statue, check out the proud lions who proclaimed the victory, and the reliefs depict the victory parade. You'll see soldiers dressed kind of like Civil War-era troops. They're marching triumphantly into the city of Milan.
With Italian unification, Milan became Italy's industrial powerhouse and cultural center. That era, the late 1800s, is when this square, the Piazza del Duomo, took the shape we see today. It was designed by a local architect named Giuseppe Mengoni. He demolished the existing neighborhood to make this huge piazza.
Check out the buildings on either side of the square. Mengoni wanted them to be almost a mirror image of each other. They're perfectly symmetrical, 4 stories tall, arches on the ground floor, windows above, exactly the same on either side of the square.
Anchoring Mengoni Square is the big statue. It honors that man who united Italy and brought a golden age to Milan, Victor Emmanuel II.
Follow the statue's gaze. He's looking at the grand arch to the left of the Duomo.
Yes, Victor Emmanuel is looking at the arch that's named in his honor, the impressive Galleria Vittorio Emanuele II. It's in the shape of an ancient triumphal arch. These were erected by the Romans to proclaim victory in battle. But this one proclaims Victor Emmanuel's great 19th century triumph over foreign oppressors. Read the words above the triumphal arch.
To Victor Emmanuel II, from the people of Milan.
The Galleria reflects the sophistication of turn-of-the-century Milan as one of Europe's most cultured cities.
We'll tour the Galleria later, but for now, turn 180 degrees to the opposite side of the piazza, directly opposite the Galleria. Find the twin buildings to the right of the Duomo. They're the two slender, tall buildings made of heavy stone with tall arched windows.
These twin buildings were built in the 1930s. Notice the severe style. It's fascist. Italy's dictator, Benito Mussolini, who spent his formative years here in Milan, made grandiose speeches from those very balconies. The relief panels tell the history of Milan. Today, the palace houses the Museo del Novecento. Here you'll see Milan's art of the 1900s.
Or Novecento.
The collection makes it clear that Milan has long been on the forefront of modern artistic trends here in Italy. It has Boccioni's Futurism, De Chirico's Surrealism, and the punctured canvases of Lucio Fontana. All were pioneers of modernism, and they had ties to the forward-looking city of Milan.
Finally, look between the two Mussolini buildings. In the distance, you'll see some modern skyscrapers.
These bulky modern buildings symbolize what came next. Mussolini's excesses led Italy into World War II. The city suffered devastating bomb damage. But as these buildings attest, the city rose again. Milan led Italy's so-called economic miracle. Today, Milan has a number of classic 1950s skyscrapers like these, as well as lots of sleek new ones.
Complete your 2,000-year tour of Milan's history by just looking around once again at the Piazza del Duomo of today.
Today, Milan is modern, rich, and people-friendly, with a great transit system and inviting pedestrian zones, like this piazza. But it also retains classic touches from a more elegant time. Notice the lanterns that dot the square with their turn-of-the-century ironwork. There's exotic palm trees. The buildings are made of harmonious stone with a vaguely pink tint. And all around you in Piazza del Duomo is a classic European scene and a local gathering point. Professionals scurry to their next appointment. Pickpockets peruse the crowd. And fashion-conscious teenagers just hang out.
It seems that, though Rome is the nation's historic and political capital, Milan is the capital of business and of fine culture. Or so the Milanese like to think.
The two cities are constantly bickering. Romans dismiss the Milanese as uptight workaholics. And the Milanese say Rome is dirty, inefficient, and corrupt. These two cities may argue, but for the tourist, they're complementary parts of the fascinating mosaic of Italy.
Next, we turn to the piazza's most famous site, the Duomo. Find a place where you can take in the Duomo's mammoth facade.
The Duomo, the exterior. The Duomo, or cathedral, is the city's centerpiece.
It's huge.
It's the third largest church in Europe, after only St. Peter's in Rome and the Cathedral of Sevilla. It's 70 yards wide and 170 yards long.
It would take 10 minutes just to walk around it.
The facade is huge and angular, with prickly spires topped with statues. The style is called flamboyant Gothic. That means flame-like.
Yeah, they make the church seem to flicker toward heaven.
With flames of stone. The facade is essentially a pentagon. That pentagon is divided by 6 vertical buttresses. There are 5 entry doors. The whole thing is done in marble with a vaguely pink-white hue. Admire the richness of the decoration. The facade is a commotion of Gothic features, pointed arch windows, statues, little pinnacles, and reliefs. Most famous of all are those statues of saints way up atop the spires. What you see here on the facade is just a fraction of the church's adornments. Scholars count 1,000 individual carvings, big and small, on the church exterior. There are another 2,000 sculptural elements inside the church. As I mentioned, for more than 2,000 years, this spot has been the spiritual heart of Milan. First was the ancient Romans' pagan temple to Minerva. As Christianity entered the empire in St. Ambrose's day, a Christian church was built here. But the building we see today was begun 1,000 years later in 1386. By then, Milan was one of Italy's richest cities, and it needed a bigger church. Milan's ruling Visconti family chose the architectural style considered the most prestigious of the day, French flamboyant Gothic. They stuck with it even after Renaissance-style domes came into vogue elsewhere in Italy. It's one of Italy's few major churches done in the Gothic style. Construction continued from 1386 all the way until 1810. Even after that, a few more decorations were added. In fact, the final touches weren't added until as late as 1965.
Get a little closer to the church. Check out the wide variety of decoration. It reflects the many years the church was under construction.
For example, the statues on the lower level date from the early 1600s. They're full of energy and movement, and the style is Baroque. Now, look above the main doorway. Find the central window with a tiny balcony. Just to the left of that window, find a statue.
I see it. It looks like the Statue of Liberty.
Yes, this statue wasn't added until 1810, 4 centuries after the church was begun. Some say this very statue inspired the French sculptor Frederick Bartholdi when he did the Statue of Liberty in New York. Now, focus on the 5 doors. The center one, the biggest, wasn't made until 1907. It features scenes of the Virgin Mary. There are many reminders of Mary on this church.
Yes, look up above the central door, near the Statue of Liberty. There's a plaque in the very center of the facade. It reads, Maria Nascenti.
Mary the Infant. The church is dedicated to the Virgin Mary. It remembers how Mary was born a perfectly pure infant who grew up to give birth to the perfectly pure Son of God. Of all the saints depicted on this church, the most important is Mary, to whom the church is dedicated.
Mary actually crowns this church, but to see her statue, we'll need a different perspective. So let's move on. Facing the church, head toward the right corner of the facade. From here, you can look down the church's long right side.
The Duomo, the view from the side. As you gaze down the right side of this church, you realize just how big it is.
And why it took so long to build.
It stretches nearly 2 football fields from end to end. From the side, you get interesting views from various angles. There's the horizontal line of the long building, and the verticals of the tall windows and pointy spires. The cathedral was not built from just any old stone. They used the most expensive stone they had, marble. It's a particular brand of marble called Pink Condoglia. It comes from the Condoglia Quarry, 60 miles from here.
Wow, 60 miles away. That must have taken a lot of wagons and oxen.
Well, actually, it came by boat. You see, back then, Milan, though completely landlocked, was one of Italy's major port cities. Since the 12th century, Milan had been digging a system of canals through the city. These canals connected Milan to the wider world, to Lake Maggiore, to the Po River, and even to the Mediterranean. So the Duomo's marble blocks were loaded onto barges at the quarry and shipped by canal. One canal came right up here to the cathedral building site, near where we stand. The journey took about a week. These canals lasted until as late as the 20th century when they were finally filled in. By the way, the former canal district, or Naviglio Grande, is now renovated and trendy, a great place for nightlife.
But you digress. Let's get a little closer to the facade's right corner. Close enough to see some of the statues and carvings.
Check out the intricate details that went into making this cathedral. First, find the statue of a nude Atlas. He seems to be holding up the buttress. Around him are robed saints. Nearby are relief panels of various Bible scenes. And get real close to check out the tiny faces.
Quite a variety. Some are angry, some smiling, some look sad.
Each detail is interesting. Now, multiply that by hundreds. These are just a tiny handful of the decorations found all over this church, outside and in. Let's see a few more carvings.
Stroll a few dozen yards down the right side. No need to go too far, just enough to see the incredible range of statues.
You'll see everything from placid saints to thrashing nudes. These statues were made over the course of 600 years, from the 14th to the 20th centuries, done by sculptors from all over Europe. There are hundreds of them on the church, and each one is unique.
Now stop and look a little farther up.
Midway up are the fanciful gargoyles. There are 96 of them altogether. These gargoyles served a dual purpose, to scare away evil spirits and as drain spouts to channel rainwater away from the building. Now, look way, way up to the tips of the spires. These are the beloved saints of Milan. They seem so relaxed, like they're just hanging out, waiting for their big day.
Now walk a few steps away from the church, far enough where you can really take in the whole expanse.
Now, from your more distant vantage point, look way up. There on the top of the church is the tallest statue of all. It stands atop the tallest spire, which rises up from the center of the Duomo, directly above the altar. On top of that central spire is the central figure of this church, the Golden Madonna, to whom this church is dedicated. Now, let's go inside the church.
Definitely, but you'll need a ticket for our next two sites. The Duomo's interior and its rooftop. You can see the church and its rooftop in any order.
Or skip these paid sites altogether if you like. While the historical flow is best the way I've laid it out, it may be more efficient to do the rooftop first. So remember to check our update page for the latest sightseeing tips.
Now let's head out. If your next stop is the Duomo interior, pause the audio tour now and restart it once you get inside. If you're doing the Duomo rooftop first, turn to track 8 for directions. And if you're skipping these paid sites, go directly to track 9.
Got it? See you at your next stop. The Duomo interior, the nave.
By now you should be inside the church. Our visit begins near the main or west entrance, where you have a view down the long nave, looking at the altar in the distance.
Unfortunately, the entrance for us tourists might put you somewhere else in the church. So take a moment to get your bearings. Locate the long, column-lined nave. We'll start at the head of that nave.
It may take you a while to get there.
Yeah, this church is massive.
So pause the audio tour until you're at the main entrance. Then find a spot where you can look down the long nave, and let's get started.
The place is huge. It's the fourth longest nave in Christendom. It stretches more than 500 feet from here at the entrance to that stained glass rose window at the far end. The style is Gothic, pointed arches, stained glass. Check out the massive pillars that line the nave. There are 52 of these babies, each one 100 feet tall. Let your eyes follow the pillars up, up, up to where they support the ceiling. It's textbook Gothic vaulting, pointed arch ribs that crisscross in an intricate pattern. This huge church was purpose-built to hold 40,000 worshippers. That was the entire population of Milan when construction began back in 1386. They started with the apse at the far end. The entrance area where we're standing now wasn't finished until 1520. And the final touches, one of the bronze entrance doors, wasn't installed until 1965.
Now focus on a few specific features. Start by gazing toward the far end.
Marking the altar, you'll see a small tabernacle. It's that domed structure atop columns.
Domes and classical columns. Isn't that a bit unusual for a Gothic church?
It is, and we'll learn why in just a bit.
Now find the cross above the altar.
Look real close. See that little red light on the cross? This marks where a particularly precious relic is kept. It's supposedly a nail from the cross of Jesus. It was brought here in the 4th century by Emperor Constantine's mother. That was when Milan was the capital of the entire Western Roman Empire. 1,700 years later, the nail is still near and dear to the hearts of Milan's faithful, who line up to see it every September when it's put on public display.
Now turn your attention to some sites closer to you. Start by turning around and facing the main entrance door.
Flanking the door are two big marble pillars. They're made of a single piece of high-quality marble and are considered the most precious columns in the entire church.
Now look down to the floor. Find a bronze line.
It's decorated with signs of the zodiac. They represent the months of the year. That line is a solar calendar. To see how it works, face in the direction of the altar.
Okay, I'm facing the altar.
Now look high to the right, 90 degrees to the right, to the upper right corner of the church. Find a tiny pinhole of white light. Can you see it?
Got it.
At noon every day, a sunbeam shines through that tiny hole and strikes the bronze line on the floor. It tells you what day of the year it is.
Wow, pretty cool.
Yeah, but local guides tell me they've never seen it work.
Well, I'm still impressed. Let's explore more of the church.
As we explore this impressive church, we'll see that the Duomo is filled with history. There are statues, tombs, and stained glass that are both old and new. The Duomo has been home to an unbroken line of bishops who've presided over Milan, stretching back all the way to ancient times. Let's start by seeing some of the very earliest artifacts.
We'll be proceeding down the right aisle. So, facing the altar, turn right and head for the right wall. Start with the first tomb, a gray stone sarcophagus at the front corner of the right wall.
The right aisle. The first coffin along the wall is 1,000 years old. It holds the remains of Bishop Aribert. He presided over Milan from the cathedral that stood here before the present structure was built.
Wow, that's old.
It is, and he's still remembered today.
Let's move on. Continue a few steps farther down the right aisle to the second tomb.
It's a red coffin that rests atop columns. The name on the tomb, Visconti.
Visconti? I've heard of them.
Yeah, they're the noble family of the 1300s who commissioned this church. Next, 10 steps further along, you'll find a big plaque on the wall. Read the many names. You can trace the unbroken chain of 144 local archbishops stretching all the way back to the 1st century. That's to the year AD 51. Above the plaque, check out the stained glass window. Like all the church's window ensembles, it has 12 panels and 12 rows, creating 144 separate scenes.
144. Is that symbolic of something?
There's all kinds of symbolism in this church. 144 is 12 times 12. The 12 apostles, the 12 tribes of Israel, the 12 toes on my feet, and so on. Now, look closely at the window's bottom row. Find a few familiar scenes.
Let's see. I see Cain killing Abel. There's the flood. And there's the drunkenness of Noah.
This window is one of the church's earliest, from the 1400s. Let's see another old window.
Continue on. Pass through the fourth chapel and stop in the fifth chapel.
This fifth window dates from 1470. That was a mere 85 years after the first stone of the cathedral was laid. The purpose of this and other church windows was to teach the illiterate masses the way to salvation through Bible stories. This particular window tells the story of Jesus from Annunciation to Crucifixion.
Yes, on the bottom, I can see the angel announcing to Mary that she'll bear the Christ child. And there's the dove of the Holy Spirit entering Mary's window.
Old windows like this were made of exceptionally high-quality glass. And these actually were stained. That is, the colors were baked in, not just painted on. This made them very expensive. They were paid for by wealthy families seeking the church's favor. The altars below generally honor the patron who made that window possible. Compare the exquisite beauty of this 500-year-old window with newer windows nearby, like the window to the right in the fourth chapel or those on the opposite wall of the church. They tend to be made of cheaper glass that's painted on, not stained. Some of them are replacements for windows shattered by the bombs of World War II.
Let's check out a new window that's as good as the old ones. Continue a few steps farther to the seventh chapel.
It honors some of the Duomo's more recent bishops, part of that long, unbroken line that stretches back to the earliest days of Christianity, back to the time of St. Peter himself. The seventh window is from the 1980s. It's bright and bold and done in a semi-abstract modern style. It celebrates two local 20th century bishops who became cardinals.
These are the guys whose tombs you'll see nearby. You can see their bodies inside the glass coffins.
These two bishops presided here in this church during dark times for Milan, World War I and World War II. Both men spoke out against the violence and helped the Milanese heal at war's end. The fact that they're remembered here by such glorious stained glass is a reminder that this great church is more than a tourist attraction. It's a living part of Milan.
Now take a few steps back into the nave. Find a place with a good view of the nave and the altar.
Take your time to find a good spot. This impressive setting deserves it. Once in the nave, focus your attention on the area around the altar. First, find the table-like altar itself, where the priest prepares communion. The space around it is colorful and busy. It's decorated with a number of statues, paintings hanging from the ceiling, and a backdrop of stained glass windows.
The altar area is anchored by that tabernacle, the dome that sits atop columns.
This tabernacle is used during church services. It houses the receptacle that holds the communion wafers.
Flanking the tabernacle are two silver statues.
These statues are Milan's most famous bishops. One is St. Ambrose. He was the 4th century bishop who put Milan on the map. Christianity had just been legalized, and Milan was the capital of the entire western half of the Roman Empire. Under Ambrose, Milan became the greatest Christian city in the world. His writings helped establish Christian dogma for the next 1,600 years. He also founded a nearby church that remains one of Milan's more noteworthy sites, Basilica Sant'Ambrogio. For all he did for the city, Ambrose is honored today as Milan's patron saint.
The other great saint depicted here is Saint Charles Borromeo.
Borromeo was the man who transformed the Duomo in the 1570s. Remember, the structure we see today was begun in 1386. By the time Borromeo inherited the project, the cathedral was still unfinished. Borromeo re-energized the project. His great contribution was the altar. He commissioned the tabernacle, as well as the ornate organs that flank the altar.
His work looks different from the rest of the church, which is simple medieval Gothic.
Yes, Borromeo pioneered a whole new style, Baroque. It's ornate and exuberant with classical touches. The altar is a dramatic stage-like setting, ideal for big Catholic spectacles. Borromeo was a champion of the Catholic Church, and this powerful Baroque style was a counterpoint to the Gothic style more popular in Protestant churches. For his contribution to the Duomo, Borromeo was honored with a burial spot directly beneath the altar,
which we'll be visiting in a bit. But first, let's turn to the next phase of the Duomo's story. For that, look up at the ceiling above the altar. The church is topped with a dome. It sits on an eight-sided base. The dome rises 215 feet.
After Borromeo, the construction languished again. Then, in the early 1800s, the French conqueror Napoleon swept into Milan. Napoleon sped up construction and more or less finished the basic structure of the church. He needed it done in order to host a very important event. He came to Milan and had himself crowned king of all Italy, right here at the altar, underneath this dome. The centerpiece in Napoleon's crown was actually a nail. It was the church's most precious relic, the nail from the cross of Jesus that today hangs above the altar.
Let's move on.
But before we do, look up at the ceiling back in the direction of the entrance. See that fancy tracery that's carved on the ceiling's ribs?
Yes. Very impressive sculpting.
Nope, that's actually painted. It looks expensive, but paint is much more affordable than carved stone.
Return to the right wall and continue on up the right aisle. Keep going straight across the transept. On the far wall, find the statue of the bald guy, the statue of Saint Bartolomeo. Frankly, it's, well...
it's grotesque.
It's monstrous.
Bizarre.
Ghastly.
Ghoulish.
Okay already. But who is he?
The statue depicts a man who's just been tortured. It's Saint Bartolomeo, an apostle and first century martyr who was skinned alive by the Romans.
Despite the gruesome torture, he seems pretty unfazed.
Well, that's why he's a saint. He holds his Bible in one hand and casually wears his own skin like a robe. Examine the graphic details of the poor guy.
His face, very expressive. His hands, you can actually see the tendons. His feet, it's all very realistic, like an anatomy textbook.
Yes. In fact, the statue was carved in 1562 by a student of Leonardo da Vinci.
As we'll see later in the walk, Leonardo had a very special connection with the city of Milan.
Leonardo was a master of the science of anatomy. He'd learned by dissection. That was something forbidden by the church at the time. Leonardo passed his love of anatomy onto his students. Look at the base of the statue, where the sculptor wrote a message. It's in Latin. I believe the inscription reads, "Anybody got some lotion?"
Rick!
Actually, the inscription says, "I was not made by Praxiteles."
That would be the classical Greek master known for making beautiful nudes.
But by Marco da Gratte.
Leonardo's pupil. Let's continue on. Walk toward the altar.
As you go, check out the floor. It's made of fine inlaid marble from the 16th century. Notice how the black marble is harder and less worn down. The white and pink marble is softer. It looks and feels more worn.
At the altar, bear right around the corner. Go about 30 steps.
I'm with you.
You'll see a door marked Scrollo di San Carlo. This leads down to the crypt of St. Charles Borromeo. If it's open, head down those stairs.
The steps lead beneath the altar. You soon reach the tomb of St. Charles Borromeo. He's in a coffin made of transparent rock crystal. You can see inside.
Yeesh. Well, that's kind of icky.
Si, molto icky, signora. You can still see Charles' withered body, preserved inside the coffin. As I mentioned earlier, Bishop Borromeo, who lived in the 1500s, was the man who transformed the Duomo.
If you glance up, you'll see some tarnished silver reliefs around the ceiling. These show scenes from Charles's life.
Charles was a remarkable man. He was born into a rich Milan family, but he gave up his wealth to follow a religious calling. He traveled to Rome to assist his uncle, who had been made pope. When Charles returned to Milan, he was made archbishop of this cathedral, serving a flock of some 800,000 people. He was only 27 years old.
It seems that many of the visitors here at Charles's tomb are not exactly tourists. They're people who still feel strongly about this pious man.
They remembered that Charles spearheaded the Catholic Counter-Reformation. At the time, Protestants were leaving the Catholic Church in droves. Charles improved the image of the Roman Catholic Church by rooting out corruption, promoting education, and prosecuting heretics. His other great legacy was this church. He transformed the altar into a rich symbol of the Counter-Reformation, Catholic strength, and enlightenment. After his death, the much-loved bishop was quickly made a saint, and he now lies buried beneath the glorious altar and tabernacle that he helped create.
Let's resurface. From here, we'll be seeing a few more sights in the church as we make our way back outside. So backtrack up the stairs and start making your way back toward the church's entrance,
which is also the exit.
On the next track, Rick and I will guide you on the way.
More sights in the church on the way to the exit. As you resurface from the Borromeo crypt, glance to your left at the three huge windows in the apse. They're certainly big and impressive.
Yeah, but they're just modern replacements, painted, not stained.
Yeah, we're connoisseurs.
Start heading up the nave to the church's main entrance. Keep an eye out for our next sight. It's along the right side of the nave near the far end. We're looking for a large purple stone basin.
By the way, I should mention one more worthwhile site that we won't visit but is likely included in your Duomo ticket. That's the Duomo Museum. It's located just outside the church. If you do visit, you'll be treated to some of the church's original statues, a big wooden model of the church, a 900-year-old crucifix, and a famous statue of St. George. I really like the Cathedral Museum.
By now, you should be approaching the church's main entrance. Locate our next site. It's along the right side of the nave. Find a large purple stone basin.
This basin is made of a precious purple stone called porphyry. Porphyry is a rare stone from Egypt that ancient Romans always used for their emperors. This basin was commissioned by Borromeo and was executed by his favorite architect, Pellegrini. It was used to baptize infants.
But the church's most famous baptistry is downstairs in the archaeological area. You'll find the entrance to the archaeological area near the church's main door. Enter the archaeological area and start making your way downstairs.
You'll be entering what's basically the church's basement. You'll see a maze of ruined brick foundations. These are all that's left of earlier churches that stood here before the present one. Remember, Milan has been an important center of Christianity since ancient times. As these ruins make clear, in Roman days, the streets of ancient Mediolanum were 10 feet below the level of today's streets.
Find the highlight here, the scant remains of an 8-sided baptistry. It's called the Paleo-Christian Baptistry of San Giovanni.
These octagonal ruins were once a small building that stood outside the church. You can see the scant remains of that church alongside. Back then, you couldn't enter the church until you were baptized, so churches had a little baptistry like this one just outside. This particular baptistry, though humble, may actually be one of the most significant places in all of Christianity. You see, it was here that young Saint Ambrose was baptized.
That's huge.
Wait, there's more. Ambrose went on to become an influential bishop. Perhaps more important, he became the mentor for a rebellious young pagan Roman, and that young man's name was Augustine of Hippo.
I've heard of Augustine.
In the year 387, Ambrose baptized the 31-year-old Augustine. It happened right here on this spot. And Augustine went on to become one of Christianity's most influential writers. His ideas have influenced even secular thinkers right up to present times.
And so it seems our Duomo visit has come full circle.
Yes, here at the very origins of the long 2,000-year history of Milan's greatness, embodied in this great cathedral.
Our visit to the Duomo interior is done.
Next up, the Duomo rooftop.
If you've already done the rooftop or aren't going there at all, you can just skip ahead to track 9, which picks the tour up right outside in front of the Duomo. Either way, Now is the time to exit the Duomo. Go back up the stairs and head outside to the Piazza del Duomo. From there, you can carry on to your next stop, whether it's the Duomo rooftop.
That's the next track.
Or the Galleria.
That's track number 9.
Pause the audio tour now and restart it at your next stop.
See you there. The Duomo rooftop.
To go up to the rooftop, find the entrance, which is generally located on the outside of the Duomo, near the back end. Depending on your ticket, you can take either the elevator or the stairs to the top. Our visit begins as soon as you reach the top, so pause the audio tour now and restart it when you're there.
We'll see you on the church's rooftop.
By now, you should be up at the top of either the elevator or stairs. You emerge into the open air. Wherever you spill out, you'll be on a lower terrace. Start making your way along the terrace on the one-way route.
As you walk along the lower terrace, you get a great look at the church's intricate Gothic architecture. You can really appreciate all the work that went into building this church. Many artists were creating things that would scarcely be seen by anyone.
Only by the eyes of God.
First, check out the famous spires topped with statues that ring the church. You're at their level now. Suddenly, these distant saints now seem more human. Also, you'll get close-ups of some gargoyles.
They're so expressive.
Keep walking. Also impressive are the rows and rows of flying buttresses. As you walk, you get ever-changing views of the various diagonals they form.
Photographers love the 3D tunnel effect the rows create.
These flying buttresses served a distinct purpose on a Gothic church. They pushed in to reinforce the church walls. This helped the walls support the roof. That meant the walls didn't need to be so strong, freeing them up for huge windows with glorious stained glass. Frankly, though, on this particular church, these flying buttresses were more decorative than functional. They were meant to give it that Gothic look that was so trendy when the church was being built.
Soon, you'll reach a narrow marble staircase.
As you approach the staircase, notice the richly carved details on the staircase railing. You'll see frogs and faces.
I see leaves, sphinxes.
And more.
Start climbing the staircase. This takes you up to the very top of the church.
As you go up the steps, notice where you are. You're at the facade of the church. The stone on your right is the church's false front. It's the part that juts up from the Duomo's roofline, making the front of the church look bigger than it actually is from the piazza. You can look between the stones and see the Piazza del Duomo way down below.
You'll soon reach the top.
You'll emerge onto a big rectangular space ringed by those spires with statues.
Let's explore. Feel free to stroll around wherever you like. The roof is sloped, so be a bit careful.
You're walking on the church's rooftop, directly above the nave, some 20 stories up. The roof is paved with marble. Lisa, this would sure make a cool place for a roof party or a concert, don't you think?
Yes. In fact, they do have concerts here. It seats 500 people.
As you wander among the spires, pick a favorite. Get close to that spire and appreciate its details. Most of them have similar features.
I've found my spire.
At the spire's base is the, well, I'll call it the fence. That's the row of pointed arches that circles the entire rooftop. Notice that each pointed arch is topped with a different cross or pinnacle.
Yeah, the fence alone is pretty impressive.
Now back to the spire. The base of each spire is made of stone blocks. That's the Condoia marble with its pink hues.
To my eye, the marble has hints of pink, white, green, and blue.
Which, to my eye, all blend into gray.
Barbarian.
On the next level up on the spire, there are vertical ribs.
And I can see a few statues of saints hiding inside the ribs.
Further up, the spires sprout flamboyant flames, flames that flicker upward to where there are still more saints.
Those statues pose beneath church-like awnings.
Finally, the spire tapers to a slender point. This is topped with a lifelike statue of a saint who gazes out over the city. Take this remarkable spire and multiply it by 135. Think of it. The church has 135 spires. They're all similar, but each one is a unique artistic creation.
No wonder it took 600 years to carve it all. Keep wandering through this forest of spires.
The biggest spire, by far, is the one that rises up from the center of the church. It's 350 feet tall and topped with a 15-foot golden statue of the Virgin Mary. She holds a staff in her hand and is crowned with a diadem of stars. Since 1774, this figure has topped the church. Locals call her La Madonnina, an affectionate term for the Mother of Christ. As the symbol of the city, this Virgin Mary overlooks all of Milan.
We should also check out some of the incredible views from here. Start with the view from the facade.
As we saw earlier, in this direction, you get some great views of the Piazza del Duomo. By the way, while you're at the facade, find Mussolini.
Say what?
The dictator Benito Mussolini. He's depicted in one of the carved reliefs here on the back side of the facade. To find it, face the Piazza del Duomo. Now, on the left side of the facade, find some reliefs that depict scenes of men boxing.
Yeah, I see those.
Now, look just above and to the right of the boxing scenes. There's a relief of carved foliage.
I see that.
Now, see the proud-looking face peering out from the leaves? Ha! That's none other than the World War II-era dictator Benito Mussolini. This relief was done in the 1930s. It's one of the last things sculpted on this 600-year-long construction project.
As you face the Piazza del Duomo, you're facing east. Now, turn 90 degrees to the left and check out the stunning view to the south.
To the south of the Duomo, find the pointed steeple. It tops a red brick, octagonal, statue-topped bell tower. This marks the San Gottardo Church. It was built in the 1300s by the same family that began the cathedral, the Viscontis. Now, nearby, find the top-heavy skyscraper.
It's hard to miss.
This is the Velasca Tower, built in the 1950s. The architect supposedly modeled it on Milan's medieval watchtowers, like those at Milan's Sforza Castle.
This skyscraper sure is ugly.
Maybe, but in its day, it was a proud symbol of Milan's rise from the ashes of World War II.
Now check out the view on the opposite side, to the north.
Looking north, there's a city skyline with more than a dozen skyscrapers. They say on a clear day you can see beyond that all the way to the Alps.
But Milan is rarely crystal clear. It's often smoggy as it sits in Italy's industrial heartland.
Find the skyscraper at the far right of the group. Look for the slender rectangle with tapering sides. That's the 32-story Pirelli Tower. Like the top-heavy tower we just saw, the Pirelli Tower also dates from the 1950s. It was an exclamation point proclaiming Italy's post-war economic miracle. Now, find the tallest building of the group. This is the UniCredit Tower from 2011. With its 750-foot-high rocket-like spire, it's Italy's tallest building. As you gaze at that soaring structure, you're gazing into Milan's future.
Feel free to wander more along the rooftop, but our tour is moving on, and it's time to plan your next move. From the rooftop, stairs take you down into the church. From there, if you have a ticket, you're welcome to tour the interior before going back outside.
If you haven't done the Duomo interior yet, you'll find that on Track 5. You'd pause the audio tour now and start Track 5 once you're inside the church.
Otherwise, our tour resumes back on Piazza del Duomo with Track 9, the Galleria of Victor Emmanuel II. So pause the audio tour now and restart it once you're ready for your next stop.
The Galleria Victor Emmanuel II.
Whether you've toured the Duomo interior, the rooftop, or neither one, by now you should be back on the Piazza del Duomo in front of the cathedral. From here, take in the Grand Arch, the entrance to the Galleria.
The Galleria looks like an ancient Roman triumphal arch. It has Roman-style arches, Corinthian columns, and a classical frieze of griffins. But this arch celebrates a modern triumph, the unification of Italy. When it was built in the 1860s and 70s, it was the marvel of its day. It proclaimed Milan as the most cultured city of a newly united Italian nation.
Start making your way to the entrance.
The Galleria was done by Giuseppe Mengoni,
the same guy who also designed the Piazza del Duomo.
It was to be the crowning piece of his design. Tragically, the very day before the gallery was to open, Mengoni fell from a scaffold to his death.
Pity.
The Galleria was built for the same purpose it serves today, as a shopping mall. It was one of the first in the world. Then, as now, it was home to shops and cafes, and lots of strolling locals.
As you enter the mall, check out the very first establishment on the left, the Bar Camperino.
The venerable Bar Camperino has been here since the very beginning, since 1867. If you peek in, you can still see its classy Art Nouveau interior. This posh place, located as it is near La Scala, has hosted opera goers for over a century. The composer Giuseppe Verdi and conductor Arturo Toscanini attended their after-parties right here. These days, Milanese come here for an aperitivo, a before-dinner drink.
Like a Campari?
Yes. In fact, it was right here that the Campari family originated that red liqueur, Campari Bitter. Italians everywhere drink Campari, either mixed with soda or as a Campari spritz.
Both are classic aperitivos. Although the aperitivo custom is common throughout Italy, it's especially prized by the Milanese.
They claim they invented it. And with a classic place like Bar Camperino, it's hard to argue otherwise.
Let's move on. Start strolling slowly up the Galleria to the center.
As you walk, admire the glass arcade overhead. Imagine how breathtaking this place was back in the 1870s. It was a technological marvel. Though it looks like it's built of stone, it was actually a skeleton of iron beams faced with stone and topped with glass. This was the industrial age, the era of trains, factories, and budding democracy. The Galleria was the first building in town to have electric lighting. But notice how Mengoni maintained the elegance of the past. The walls are richly carved with classical arches. The glass skylight even seems to be supported in a traditional way, held up on the shoulders of colossal statues of stone. And beneath your feet is an inlaid marble floor of colorful stone. When it opened, the Galleria was a stunning success. And it remains Milan's most popular place for shopping, strolling, eating, meeting friends, and people watching.
By now, you should be reaching the Galleria's center. Stop here and check out the scene.
As you can see, the Galleria has four arms. They meet here in the center, which is crowned by a glorious glass dome. The Galleria's design was similar to other shopping malls built all across Europe, but Milan's was supersized. The arms are four stories tall and 50 feet wide. This central dome is 125 feet across. At the base of the dome are four mosaics, representing the four major continents.
Only four? Looks like Australia didn't make the cut. Sorry, mate. Now check out the floor beneath the dome. It's covered with colorful mosaics. Start with the mosaic that depicts a wolf.
It's the ancient Roman she-wolf with Romulus and Remus and the letters SPQR.
To the Senate and people of Rome.
This mosaic obviously honors the city that, since 1870, has been the national capital, Rome.
Now stroll over to the next mosaic, the one near the right arm.
So we're circling the mosaics under the dome counterclockwise.
This mosaic depicts a fleur-de-lis, the symbol of the city of Florence.
Remember, the Galleria celebrates newly united Italy, so even former rivals, like Florence and Rome, are now sister cities.
Keep going counterclockwise to the next mosaic. This is a red cross on a white background. It's topped with a castle-like crown.
This is the coat of arms of the city of Milan.
Now head straight for the center, directly under the dome.
The biggest mosaic in the center has a white cross topped with a crown. This is the coat of arms of the Royal Savoy family. Why them? Because their most famous son was the man who united the country and gave his name to this galleria, Victor Emmanuel II.
Now find the final mosaic. It's the one with a crowd gathered around it. This one depicts a bull.
The bull is the symbol of the city of Turin. Crowds gather here to see the Torino, or little bull. Over the years, a legend has grown about this bull. Locals step on his irresistible little testicles. They say this brings the person good luck. Give it a try, Lisa.
Why not?
By the way, two local girls explained to me that it works better if you give it a spin.
Okay. Whee!
They said you have to spin two times and it must be clockwise.
Whee! Whee!
With so much spinning, the mosaic has to be replaced every few years.
Frankly, I feel sorry for the poor bull.
Well, look at his face. Is he in pain or is he aroused?
Let's explore more of the Galleria. Pick an arm, any arm, and stroll a ways down. Then make your way back to the center. As you browse around, let Rick talk about some of the shops.
You'll find clothing boutiques, restaurants, jewelers, and bookstores. Some are old, some new. Restaurant Beefy, right under the dome, has been here since 1867. Across the way, Savini has been here since 1881. It's hosted celebrities ranging from opera composer Puccini to Charlie Chaplin to Frank Sinatra. These classy restaurants offer up some of Milan's signature dishes, like osso buco.
That's veal shanks. It's often served with another signature dish, saffron-flavored risotto alla milanese.
And, of course, there's the ever-popular cotoletta alla milanese, a breaded veal cutlet.
Let's keep strolling a while longer.
You'll see plenty of high-fashion boutiques. Milan is home to some of the world's biggest designer brands. Armani, Prada, Dolce & Gabbana, Versace. They're all based in Milan. You'll likely see some of these.
And more. There are designer labels from all around the world.
Since the 1950s and 60s, Milan has been arguably the world's fashion capital.
In fact, the word milliner, a maker of hats, comes from the word Milan-er, someone from Milan.
Know-it-all. Milan has thousands of fashion houses, showrooms, and retail outlets like these. Every year, Milan hosts a big international Fashion Week convention. Meanwhile, the city's numerous art schools are constantly training designers of the future.
All these shops are very enticing, but we should start making our way back to the center of the Galleria under the dome.
The Galleria is a major showcase for many local Milan-based companies, from tie makers to booksellers. And the famed car maker Ferrari, whose headquarters is in nearby Modena, often has a glitzy showroom right here.
But, sorry, you won't have time to buy that $500,000 sports car today because our tour is moving on. Once back at the dome, we'll be leaving the Galleria from the far end.
That is opposite the way we entered.
So, from the dome, start making your way down the arm of the Galleria that leads away from the entrance.
As you walk, check out a few more shops. You may see the Milan-based Rizzoli Books. Rizzoli publishes Italy's top national newspaper, the Corriere della Sera. Further along is an outlet for Borsolino. This is a famous Italian maker of men's hats, especially fedoras. They've been in business here since 1877.
And another business Milan is known for is, of course, opera. As we continue to the Galleria exit, why don't we enjoy a little music by local favorite Giuseppe Verdi?
Bellissimo.
The Galleria spills out into the open air. You're in a pleasant piazza, the Piazza della Scala. Make your way to the center of the piazza, where there's a statue ringed with trees.
Piazza della Scala and Leonardo da Vinci. This smart little square is surrounded by impressive neoclassical buildings. The one directly behind the piazza statue is Milan's City Hall. That's the home to its mayor and city council. Now, focus on the statue.
It's Leonardo da Vinci.
Yes, the great painter, inventor, scientist, and all-around Renaissance man. The statue captures the Leonardo we've come to know. He was a tall, striking man with a long, flowing beard that set him apart from his neatly shaven contemporaries. The statue was erected in 1870. It's a reminder that Leonardo spent his best 20 years here in Milan.
In fact, his most famous work, The Last Supper, is here in Milan.
Although Leonardo was raised in Florence, it was the city of Milan that really embraced him. Leonardo found high-paid work with the powerful Sforza family in the Sforza Castle.
The impressive castle is located a half mile north of here and is worth a visit. Leonardo even helped design the castle ramparts.
The Sforzas ruled Milan in Renaissance times, much like the Medici family ruled Florence.
Or the way the Viscontis had dominated Milan in medieval days.
Leonardo left his mark all over the city of Milan, and in many ways. For example, he renovated Milan's canal system by adding a state-of-the-art system of locks.
Check out the statue's pedestal. Each side features a different relief panel. These show more of Leonardo's contributions to Milan.
In one relief, he's standing at his easel. It was here in Milan that Leonardo painted the famous Virgin of the Rocks. That painting originally decorated a Milan church.
Though it now hangs in the Louvre. And, of course, he painted The Last Supper here. That was for another Milan church.
And was paid for by the Sforza family.
Another relief shows Leonardo as an architect, showing blueprints to his patrons.
Leonardo was hired by the Sforza family to supervise the court's cultural activities. He even designed parade floats for their elaborate processions. As a sculptor, he worked on a huge 15-ton statue of a horse. If he'd had a chance to complete that horse, it would have been the biggest equestrian monument ever built.
Now check out the four statues that stand beneath Leonardo.
They're called the Leonardeschi. They're four of the many Milan artists who either worked for or who were influenced by the master. They went on to paint the many Leonardo-style works that now grace churches and museums all over Milan.
Leonardo obviously left a huge legacy here in Milan.
Yes, but of all his talents, I think the statue here on Piazza della Scala shows him doing what he came to be best known for, just thinking.
Now follow Leonardo's gaze. He seems to be looking across the street. He's facing in the direction of our final site, La Scala Opera House.
La Scala Opera House and Museum. This neoclassical building may look a lot like dozens of others around town, but it's arguably the world's most prestigious opera house. Frankly, lovers of opera are, well, crazy people. Opera is like a religion to them. Milan is their Mecca. And this building, La Scala, is their sacred temple. Teatro alla Scala first opened its doors in 1778. At the time, opera was all the rage. It had originated in Italy and was now sweeping across Europe. La Scala quickly established itself as one of the premier opera theaters. The stage was enormous, the acoustics were wonderful, and the talent top-notch. The Milanese acquired a reputation as the most knowledgeable fans in the world. Many of the greatest operas got their first performance here. Madame Butterfly, Nabucco, Turandot. All the great opera singers, from Caruso to Callas to Pavarotti, have sung here. The opera composer Verdi chose to live and work in Milan to be near the action, and the conductor Toscanini was practically a saint in this town. For more than two centuries, the glitterati of the opera world have descended on Milan to see an opera here. They make the scene, mingling with other well-dressed patrons in the chandeliered ballrooms. Then they attend after-parties in the ritzy cafes of what serves as La Scala's unofficial annex, the Galleria Victor Emmanuel.
And all that may even be happening tonight. Let's cross the street for a closer look at La Scala.
As you cross, you can't help but notice the tracks and overhead wires. These are for Milan's classic old yellow trams. The system dates back more than a century. With 100 miles of track, it's both efficient and atmospheric. Line number one runs right by La Scala.
A great way to arrive on opening night. At La Scala, check out the posters. See what's going on. Anything tonight? La Scala has opera, ballet, and orchestra concerts throughout the year. Seats sell out quickly, so book in advance.
Or try to snag super cheap day-of-the-show tickets. The box office is located a ways down the left side of the theater on Via Filodrammatici.
The best way to see the theater and learn more about La Scala is at the La Scala Museum. It's just to the left of the theater's grand entrance.
At the museum, you can actually get a glimpse of the interior of the ornate theater from one of the box seats. The museum exhibits give a decent overview of opera, but its highlight is its collection of quirky opera artifacts. You'll see things like Verdi's top hat, Rossini's eyeglasses, Toscanini's baton, Fettuccini's pesto, and a snip of Mozart's hair.
Wait a minute. Wasn't one of those...
There are musical scores, portraits of all the greats, and even a cast of Chopin's hand.
Chopin's hand? Well, not much can top Chopin's hand, so let's start winding this tour up. From here, the rest of Milan awaits.
Yep, if you're up for more sightseeing, the rest of Milan is at your fingertips. The biggies are probably Leonardo's Last Supper, the Brera Art Gallery, and the Sforza Castle with Michelangelo's final Pietà. They're a bit of a walk from here, but easily reached by public transportation from the Duomo or a quick taxi ride. Right here on Piazza della Scala, you'll find the Galleria d'Italia, featuring 19th and 20th century Italian painters.
I know where I'm headed next. Shopping. Milan's world-class shopping district is just a 7-minute walk from here. Facing La Scala, turn right, up Via Manzoni. You'll reach Via Monte Napoleone. That's a classy pedestrian street lined with glitzy fashion boutiques. It's got great window shopping and people watching.
Milan awaits. We've seen the city from the days of St. Ambrose to the massive Duomo of medieval times. We've seen the Renaissance of Leonardo, the 19th century elegance of the Galleria and the heyday of opera, it's clear that Milan has been and still is one of the treasures of the cultural wonder that is Italy. We hope you've enjoyed Milan's Duomo neighborhood. Thanks to Jean Openshaw, the co-author of this tour. If you're up for more sightseeing in the rest of Italy, we have more audio tours covering other major cities: Venice, Florence, Rome, Siena, Assisi, and Naples. This tour was excerpted from the Rick Steves Italy Guidebook. For more details on eating, sleeping, and sightseeing in Milan, refer to this year's edition of that guidebook. For more free audio tours and podcasts, and for information about our TV shows, bus tours, and travel gear, visit our website at ricksteves.com. This tour was produced by Cedar House Audio Productions. Grazie.
Arrivederci.
And buon viaggio.
Whee!